The Veritas Radio Network is guaranteed the right to offend, annoy, agitate, shout heresy, and entertain.
You should start programming right now.
Kind of like the cultural sewage served up on Bravo or CMT, only it's on 24 hours a day, except Sundays. When the truth gets you angry and you throw your smartphone, remember, no one is forcing you to listen to the truth on the Veritas Radio Network.
You can't handle the truth.
You're doing that of your own free will. That's what makes this country great and any gay marriage pointless.
That's offensive.
So there isn't much you can do about it, Chowderhead.
I'm trying to think, but nothing happens.
Grab a book, take a vow, and conform your mind to reality. Otherwise, you're just another Judas-inspired Karl Marx wannabe.
And your children will steal your credit card number to buy tickets to the Miley Cyrus Twerkers Ball.
I came in like a wrecking ball.
Are you ready? Let's get it on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.
When you bring the words true and money together in modern America, you just made modern American media history. The True Money Show with David Simpson, exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.
Mike is trying to get us into a British invasion today, because we're going to have a British invasion in a few minutes. Let those wild boys sing. All right, everybody, I am playing air guitar in here. I see Christopher's in here singing. We're all kind of getting excited about the big broadcast day we have going on in here. I don't know if Christopher can sing or not. Can you carry a tune, Christopher? No, he's shrugging. Maybe, a little bit. He knows if he says yes, I'll recruit him for the choir. Well, I am David Simpson. This is the True Money Show. Coming to you from the Bulldog Kia Studio of the Veritas Radio Network. It keeps growing and expanding and getting better and better. Mike tells me that he's finishing up the republication of a book on the Protestant Reformation. And, you know, we sometimes have a hard time explaining to you what all you get for your money by supporting the Veritas Radio Network. Yes, you get a free press. Yes, you get sometimes you win prizes. Yes, you get the audio downloads from all the prior shows. You have access to the store. I mean, there's a million things that we all, like I said, we sometimes have difficulty expressing. And just one more is the fact that Mike works all the time behind the scenes to bring you more and more literature and historical records and researched items to help us understand the world around us better. And that kind of is the point of the Veritas Radio Network. We are all about trying to find the truth, expressing those things with charity as best as we are able, excuse me, and then conforming our minds to that reality so we can actually say that we have our hands on truth. So that's the point of the Veritas Radio Network. I'm glad you've joined us today. If you'd like to call into the show, 844-5-CRUSADE, 844-527-8723. I also have my email open if you'd like to email me, David@tffco.com. People sometimes ask, they say I don't mention the show or my business enough on the show. Well, I don't really like to hawk my wares that way or toot my own horn, but I will say if you'd like to learn more about me or my company or the my blogs and stuff I've written, you can go to fiscalfitnesscompany.com and find me easy enough. That's fiscal as in pertaining to money.
fitness.com on the internet. Okay, so I kind of wanted to open the show with a little bit of a question for our meditation as we go forward today. And the question is this: can you have an economic system based on immorality or theft? It may sound like an obvious question. It may sound like something that the answer is so obvious that we should even ponder it, but I think we ought to, because remember, the True Money Show has three purposes, the first of which is explaining and exposing the pernicious monetary system that we all live under. And so I'm going to class this show as coming under that heading. So again, as you hear my guest and I speak today, keep asking yourself, can you have an economic system based on immorality and or theft? Okay? So I'm going to get right to my guest because I'm so excited to have Mr. Rob Slane on today. I came across his writings in a newsletter that I get because I'm a member of Samaritan Ministries, which is that health share program. And Rob writes a regular column for Samaritan Ministries newsletter. And I was just taken in by his sound reasoning, his goodwill, I became persuaded pretty quickly that this guy must have studied scholastic philosophy. I'll ask him that question. I don't know if he has or not, but it sure seems like he has. And that's one of my passions. Mike and I host a show every week dedicated to learning the old ways of thinking so we can think correctly. But just to give you a little taste of his forthrightness and his erudition, this is the opening paragraph of an article that I'm going to discuss in a little bit. He says this. So this is Rob Slane writing. Politicians are usually expert at hiding their wicked plans behind jargon words that make it sound as if they are doing something good and beneficial. More often than not, this will involve using the word, quote, taxation rather than, quote, theft, and then using words like the public good and social justice to cover up the theft. But every once in a while, they forget themselves and in a moment of madness end up proposing something which is so self-evidently wrong that even the dullest and most apathetic of people can see it clearly. Now, do you get a sense that this guy doesn't mince words and he writes without the truth with excellency and he's really trying to get your attention? That's what I appreciate in the newsletter writings that he does for Samaritan. And I knew right away when I started doing this show that I'd have to have Rob Slane on one day. So let me introduce my guest and then we'll have him come on and answer some questions for us. And I hope you'll consider calling in as well. Rob Slane dwells in the country formerly known as Great Britain, now known as what he calls the Quagmire. He is married to the very best wife imaginable, and so far they have been entrusted with the upbringing of six little Slanes. These little ones are decidedly free-range creatures, having been spared the meat processing plant known as a state schooling system, and they are home-educated by people who love them. Having been intensely hostile to Christianity until his late 20s, he finally gave up the pretense and admitted that it, that is Christianity, had been right and he, that is Rob Slane, had been wrong all along. Since then, that initial realization has been confirmed over and over again as it has become clear what a nasty, nihilistic, intolerant quagmire secularism has led us all into. So he picked up five smooth stones and set about playing his own small part in defying the secularist Goliaths in their bleak, hopeless, and cheerless landscape. This guy sounds like he was made for the Crusade Channel and Veritas Radio Network. He is the author of The God Reality, a critique of Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion, and of A Christian and an Unbeliever Discuss Life, the Universe, and Everything. Thus, does he write monthly worldview articles in the American health sharing company Samaritan Ministries, and also contributes to the Canadian magazine Reform Perspective. He also blogs on a site called The Blogmire, and I highly recommend you guys going and checking that out. Mr. Slane, welcome to the True Money Show.
Hello there, David. Hi, how are you doing?
I'm wonderful. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show. I was excited to tell Mike, I said, I got a real crusader. We call our channel the Crusade Channel. I said, I got a real crusader coming on who I think will be able to enlighten us quite a bit.
I don't know about that, but thank you so much for your kind introduction. I think you actually... You asked the question of whether I studied classical philosophy in your introduction.
Yes.
I have to say the answer to that is no. I actually studied many years ago when I was still an atheist. I studied sociology at university, so I've had no classical training and no training in classical philosophy. Unfortunately.
Well, that even frightens me more then, because it means you've intuitively come to these conclusions, which means that you must have a greater heart and soul and brain than I could ever hope to achieve.
I doubt that somewhat, but maybe.
Okay, so you heard my meditative question of the day, right? Which is, can you have an economic system based on immorality and theft? And I'm not going to ask you to answer that outright. I want us to have a kind of a discussion and see if we can maybe think on that concept a little bit as we go forward in time. How does that sound?
Yeah, I think that sounds great. Yeah, I have a few thoughts on that. I'm sure we'll have a good discussion.
Well, the first item that I have, and this is not from your blog, this is just a news piece, and I wanted to introduce kind of some of your writing through opening up with this news piece, and I won't read from it. I'll just say the title is Eurozone Bailouts, Which Countries Remain? And so the article goes into the idea that Ireland and Greece and Portugal and Cyprus and Spain and Italy at some point in time have been on, I guess you might call it their own sort of dole, where they need money to maintain their banking systems or whatever other distributionist type of welfare systems they have. I think at this time, when this article is being written in December of 2013, I think, Portugal just came? No, not Portugal's. I think Spain was just coming off of it. Cyprus was going back and forth. Greece, of course, came back to the trough in 2015. But here's kind of my opening question in this, and that is, what is going on with all these countries needing money? What do you think is the basic cause?
A lot of this would tie in with the European Union generally, and the European Union is very much split into kind of different sections, and you have some strong economies. Obviously, Germany is the central strong economy. Britain, at least on paper, has a strong economy. However, lots of the countries that you mentioned, sort of Portugal, Spain, Greece, and even Italy, they're kind of the southern European countries, the Mediterranean countries, they are all part of the Eurozone. So they all got rid of their own currencies back in, I think, the year was 2000 or thereabouts, and joined the Eurozone. And basically, the problem, one of the problems with that is it's that the euro is a one size fits all policy upon all countries, and ostensibly fiscal policy is really run in not Brussels as many people kind of suppose, but really in Berlin, and and so many of the decisions with regarding to kind of European central banking and interest rates are essentially taken in Berlin and for the benefit of the German economy. And of course, these economies, the German economy, Italian, Spanish, etc., they all have very different needs and would probably need very different fiscal policies. So one of the answers to the questions is that a one-size-fits-all approach has been kind of imposed upon these countries, and it basically doesn't work, and it cannot work. And so you have, you know, countries like Greece, where, for example, youth unemployment is approaching 50%,
wow.
And in Spain, not really that far off it. So I think the first answer to that question would be, really to focus on that one-size-fits-all policy, which is disastrous for those countries.
Well, you know, we have the exact same problem over here in the States, and Mike and I talk about it on the Veritas Radio Network all the time, which is there's a problem of scale in all of these issues of government, and no one wants to address that very basic issue. If you're going to claim to be a republic was never meant to service 360 million people. We're, you know, maybe at the largest, 250,000. But we violate that governing principle, and we violate it to our detriment, don't you think?
Yep, exactly. And another one other point to make about the European Union is it has essentially, from what I can tell, operated I think the phrase is kind of like helicopter funds. Funds are helicoptered into at one stage it was into Ireland. And at one stage, into some of the newer countries that joined back in the early 2000s, like Poland, the Eastern European countries. So, my wife is Polish. I get to visit Poland quite a lot. Although Poland isn't actually in the Eurozone, it's in the EU, mm-hmm. but not actually, it doesn't have the Euro currency.
Okay.
Is what is astonishing when I go there, I go from the airport and travel around a bit, and I see road after road basically with signs next to it saying, you know, this road has been paid for with EU money. And so what you essentially have is a fantastically enormous bureaucratic system of wealth redistribution from some parts of the EU into others. And I think the problem, so Poland, for example, has been described as the miracle economy because it largely went through the banking crisis in 2008-2009 unscathed. I think its GDP didn't fall, unlike most European and non-European economies.
Yeah.
However, by and large, their so-called economic miracle has, as far as I can see, been paid for by other European countries. So money has been poured into it. And another great factor in it is that many Poles have basically come to the richer countries in Europe, Germany, France, and especially Great Britain, and have got jobs here, which kind of suggests to me that it cannot be such an economic miracle if, and I mean literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Poles have come to Britain over the past few years to get jobs here.
Right.
That doesn't sound like they have an economic miracle back in Poland. It sounds like they have something which on the surface of it might look like that. But when that EU money dries up and when perhaps the Poles go back to Poland and perhaps aren't able to come here if we do leave the European Union, the economic miracle might turn out to be a bit hollow, really.
Well, it sounds like you're describing a very similar thing that goes over here, which is kind of a levelizing of economy from one state to another, right?
Yeah.
Where they don't want anyone really to succeed. They want everyone to be kind of in abject poverty. So in America, the mechanism is whenever there's any kind of catastrophe of any sort whatsoever, it could be natural calamities or just a political or social calamity, upheaval, then some states get robbed at the expense of others to prop up what's going on in a given state. So it goes on everywhere. The curious thing is that people don't recognize it for what it is. So I wanted to talk a little bit about your article. So I'm talking, my name is David Simpson. I'm talking to Rob Slane on the Veritas Radio Network. This is the True Money Show. You can call into us if you'd like, 844-5-CRUSADE. So Rob blogs over at a thing called The Blogmire. I highly recommend you checking it out. And I came across one of the articles that I wanted to talk about. It was called Just Four Words, actually. So look that title up when you get to his blog. And in that blog, it's a very short piece, Rob makes this statement. The banks are bankrupt and, according to the received wisdom of our day, apparently need a bailout. So my question to you is, two questions, really. One, isn't it nonsensical to give large sums of money to an entity that just proved itself incapable of managing money? And then two, where does bailout money come from? What do you have to say about those ideas?
In answer to your first question or rather first point, absolutely. And it wouldn't happen, I don't think, in any other industry, really. So we had back here in 2008, we had several banks which basically had been running their affairs in shall we say not a particularly good way, and basically they faced bankruptcy.
Yes.
And so the government came along and bailed them out, stepped in and poured public funds, so that kind of taps into your second question, public funds into bailing them out.
Right.
Now I'm not a financial expert. I'm not a banking expert. Although I have to say, neither do these people appear to be really. And I think it is a matter of common sense. I think your point is absolutely commonsensical, if that's a word, which is basically that, you know, if something has proven itself to be incapable of functioning properly, what do you do with it? Do you prop it up? The alternative doesn't seem to have been considered, and from what I understand, the main alternative would simply be to break it up and to sell the assets on to other companies who perhaps could manage things in a better and a more coherent way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, to me, these things are commonsensical, and yet they're never accepted. And here's another one that's never accepted, again, coming from your just four words. So, I'm going to read in one quick little paragraph. It says, now here's the, in just four words, Mr. Rob Sling, my guest today, is describing the Cypriot bailout. Okay, so Cyprus had all kind of problems, and they came with one solution that wasn't very palatable to the common man, so they came up with a plan B, and here's the plan B. Basically, which was to, quote-unquote, take it from the rich. So Rob writes this. Now, here's the catch. Deposits already at the Bank of Cyprus, over 100,000 euros, are being frozen, and these, together with the deposits of over 100,000 euros at the new, quote-unquote, bad bank, will then be used by the Cypriot government to raise the $5.8 billion needed to qualify for the EU bailout. Exact figures have not been given as to how much will be stolen. Sorry, I meant levied. But a spokesman for the Cypriot government suggested that depositors could lose around 30% of the balance. So you maintain, and I agree 100%, that this is just a theft. This is a theft, yep, by bureaucrats to prop up a failing system. And your answer to the question is, how about we just apply the moral law? My question to you is, why is that always poo-pooed as such a stupid idea to apply the moral law to politics and economics?
Sorry, I didn't quite catch the question there, David. If you could just ask that again at the end.
Yeah, I just said, why is morality and ethics always just ridiculed as the answer to some of these problems that we're having?
Mm, absolutely. And the larger point there is that yes, they're ridiculed, and yet they must be logically and morally absolutely inseparable. So we could see this if we have economics on a small scale, i.e. if we have a small community of just a few people who trade with each other and who buy goods from each other, we could easily pick up the theft if there was theft going on, and we would say that A, it's immoral, and B, and this taps into the wider question that you asked right at the beginning of the program, that ultimately it's doomed to fail. If you have people who are acting immorally, then the economy is going to suffer over the long run. So in a sense, if you have just a small scale economy where you can see the theft being done, it's really kind of easy to see that morality and economics must go hand in hand. When you get far larger economies, such as the British economy or even bigger U.S. Economy, it seems to become far more difficult for people to actually spot what is easy to spot in that small scale. And so, as I mentioned at the beginning of that piece, politicians will start using jargon words it's kind of a smokes and mirrors way of extracting more taxation from people, and some of the words they use I mentioned at the beginning, like the public good and social justice. But basically, they end up, kind of layering the theft upon theft, and it becomes quite. It's a bit. I suppose it's a bit. A good analogy would be money laundering itself. Really, any money launderer we'll try to layer the money so that there's no kind of detection, and that's kind of what happens on a big scale with governments. And the end result is that people don't understand that there's theft going on. And so, if you do invoke the moral law, the eighth commandment, "Thou shalt not steal," suddenly people kind of think, well, that's religion, That's part of morality, but no, it's not. It's inseparable. Mm-hmm. You cannot have an enduring economic system that actually functions properly over a long period of time which is not moral.
Yeah,
there must be morality, and the two things are intrinsically connected.
Yeah, the people are going to see the patent unfairness eventually, and then they will reject it because that's what people do, at least people of goodwill. I'm David Simpson. You're listening to the Crusade Channel on the Veritas Radio Network. My guest today is Mr. Rob Slane. From England, right now we're talking about some bailouts. In a minute, we're going to go and kind of see the impact to England this has had in the Brexit phenomenon. So we're going to come back in a few minutes to talk to Mr. Rob about that. I hope you'll hang on, Rob. You're listening to The True Money Show on the Veritas Radio Network, radio the way it should be.
They say money is the root of all evil. But on The True Money Show, you'll learn that the Federal Reserve is the root of all evil money. The True Money Show with David Simpson, exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade Channel.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
If David Simpson had been Jerry Maguire and showed Leon the true money, it would have hit him over the head like the proverbial ton of bricks. Gold bricks, that is. Let David Simpson show you the true money every Wednesday at noon Central, exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.
If you got it, you don't need it. If you need it, you don't got it. You don't get it, shame on you. Funny, funny, funny what money can do. Them that have it, get more of it.
I love
Tino. The less they need it, the more they love it. And it sticks to them like glue.
I feel like I'm from that band.
Funny, funny, funny what money can do. Ask the rich man, he'll confess, money can't buy happiness.
Nobody can
ask
buy lots of politicians.
Man, he don't doubt, but he'd rather be miserable with than without. If you spend it, please be wiser. If you save it, you're a miser. You don't want it, you're cuckoo. Funny, funny, funny what money can do.
Yeah, money confuses us all. Hello. We're not going to have Jerry in there, are we?
This is singing.
Oh, don't you like it?
No, I don't like it. You want to sing with me?
Can I sing with you?
Sure you can.
All right.
If I do not...
Why does he sound like a child?
Because that's his act.
All right, that was Jerry Lewis coming on singing a few with us. So I am David Simpson. This is the True Money Show on the Veritas Radio Network, brought to you live. You can call in 844-5-CRUSADE, 844-527-8723. I have as my guest today Mr. Rob Slane, who I will turn to in just a minute. But first, a few little things here. I want to give what we're calling these days the weather report. By the way, I'm looking outside, and the actual weather looks very stormy. But we don't want it to look stormy in here. So today is the, 27th of July? And this is the 259th broadcast day of the Crusade Channel. We currently have 2,608 Founders Pass members. That means people who have ponied up a few bucks to help support the network. But that leaves us 393 short of our 2016 goals, with only 110 days left to get those people. So, if we do not meet these modest goals, we cannot continue delivering the Crusade Channel quality, original programming to you. Please consider joining us today by signing up at the Founders Pass paid membership at veritasradionetwork.com/join. We're going to keep giving those announcements out because we want you to know this is an effort to create a free press, a press that is outside the control of either its advertisers or the public court of public opinion. We think the truth is that important that we're willing to, stake our futures on it. Particularly Mike Church's future, who left a large network because he was talking about the truth and they didn't like it. So he had to set something up to do it, and this is it. And I hope you will go on to the VeritasRadioNetwork.com site and join in and help us to create a free press. So we've been pondering this question, can you have an economic system based on immorality and theft or theft? And we've kind of come up with a conclusion that, no, you really can't, because, one, people will eventually see the unfairness of it. They sense this redistribution of wealth is nothing more than a theft from one class to another. And we talked about public funds, so we said, hey, you know, the public authority is supposed to have these things in trust for everyone, not for a segment of the society. But when they take on benefiting one segment over another, then there's an injustice going on. That's what I think my guest today has helped me to flesh out a little bit. My guest, again, is Rob Slane. I can kind of consider him a modern-day G.K. Chesterton, or if you want somebody on this side of the lake, H.L. Mencken. But Rob is a Christian, so Mencken, I don't think, was. So you'd be a Christianized Mencken, I think. But you do bring that kind of wit and wisdom to the topic, and I thank you for being here, Rob.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good to be here.
So I wanted to move a little bit into, okay, so to me, all those that talk about the bailouts and the pigs, you know, they called those countries the pigs, right? Portugal, Ireland, Italy, Greece, yep. And Spain. They were pigs because they needed more money, and I guess everyone else thought they should get along just fine without it. I don't know. So it's had its impact, right? The reverberations are continuing. And well, let me ask you, do you think Brexit is part of that whole process?
Yes, but not necessarily the main part of it. I think my personal reasons for voting to leave the European Union are first and foremost based on national sovereignty, and basically the European Union was kind of sold to this country as a trading union,
right?
Back in the 1970s, but if you go back to the founding document of the European Union, which is the Treaty of Rome from 1952, it clearly talks about an ever closer union, and you kind of read on in that founding document, and it's pretty clear that what was envisaged was a political, economic, and legal union, really. So there's that kind of view. I'd say I'm probably in the minority of Leave people who'd say that was the primary reason for leaving. The biggest reason, I think, for most people for leaving, and it kind of ties in with that, was the immigration issue. And basically, if you were to if any of your listeners happened to be bored one day and wanted to find out the level of immigration into Britain over the last, say, 30 years, they could go online and look at the graphs, and quite frankly, the figures are quite staggering, really. So up until about 1991, by and large, net immigration and emigration cancelled each other out. I think roughly 50,000 people came in and 50,000 people went out, which was a fairly sensible approach, really. And then, first of all, in 1991, the European Union brought in something called the Schengen Agreement, which effectively eradicated borders between the countries. So you can walk from one country to another without even so much as having a passport, basically. And the effect of that was basically to kind of create like a free movement of people from one country to the other. And then from 1997 onwards, with we had a new government in who deliberately allowed many more people in. The figures just skyrocket. And so in I think it was 2 years ago, we had net immigration of something like 275,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think last year it was even more. I think it was 300,000. So they're talking about, you know, 250,000 people coming in extra every year. And what really kind of got many people out voting to leave the European Union was basically this unchecked immigration, and the fact that as a member of the European Union and the single market, in Europe, we cannot control our borders.
Yeah.
So basically, we have to let in who they say we let in. We just don't have the control of the borders. So I think the consideration that you mentioned at the beginning was another consideration. But I think probably the immigration thing was the main thing that got most people out there.
Well, you know, I mean, quite frankly, I would either your preferred reason, in other words, your principal reason for voting to leave, and even the immigration issue, I think are both valid reasons that a country could have for protecting its own sovereignty. I don't see any to me, there's no disgusting, this isn't xenophobia, this isn't racism, this isn't any of the things they're going to class us with. It's just saying that we can't even maintain our own national identity.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And actually, the European Union, I tend to look at it as almost like a prototype for really globalization in general.
Yes.
So what became very clear with the vote is it opened up a division which in some ways mirrors the division which is kind of happening in your own country to a certain extent, which is, so we have two main political parties here. We have Conservative Party and the Labour Party, so they're equivalent to Republicans and Democrats.
Correct.
And ostensibly, they agree on absolutely everything.
Uh-huh.
There's almost no difference between them. They squabble amongst each other and make people think that they differ on those things, but generally speaking, they don't. And what became apparent with this vote is really people on the Leave side who won have absolutely no voice in our parliament. But what was apparent was the real division in the country that opened up was really between, and this is a generalization, but broadly speaking, between those who want a kind of Britain as part of a globalized world where, you know, there are no borders, that sovereignty is not important, that kind of thing.
Right.
And those people who basically reject that, they might reject it for different reasons. As I say, I reject it on principle. Some people reject it because they see that we can no longer control our borders, and so many of our laws are being made by in the European Parliament and European Council rather than in our own country. And I think by and large, that to a large extent, from what I can see, that same sort of division has been opening up in the US. I'm no fan of Mr. Trump by any means, and certainly no fan of Mrs. Clinton,
yeah.
As you probably could have guessed. But it seems to me that the kind of division is opening up is between the sort of Clintonite, the globalist kind of corporatist mentality on the one hand, and, you know, Trump at least kind of standing for some kind of, you know, let's just get back to kind of national sovereignty,
yeah,
and,
yeah,
you know, protecting our own borders, that kind of thing. So it's kind of sort of the same divisions kind of happening a little bit.
Now you've described American politics. I mean, so the British politics is very similar to ours. I'm talking to Rob Slane from the country formerly known as Great Britain, he says. I'm David Simpson on the Crusade Channel, the Veritas Radio Network. So you're going out on a limb here and on your blog at theblogmire.com. You say Brexit, be prepared for the mother of all stitch-ups, and you prophesied. So
I tried not to, but
yeah, you say that you don't try to prophesy, but you did, and you say you think this is going to be undone. And here's a paragraph from that blog. Then we have the sad case. Now, by the way, so Rob pieces together a bunch of small little things that he thinks add up to how this is probably going to be undone. And this is just one, but I thought it was so apropos. Because we have right now going on in our country the Democratic National Convention, and they're the same kind of whining people Rob's about to describe here. Then we have the sad case of the thousands upon thousands of young people for whom the world has just apparently caved in. The sight of some of the most privileged young people ever to walk this earth foaming with rage at the old people who have apparently stolen their future is frankly nauseous, and also gives a glimpse of a rather nasty tyranny in the making. Yet it is their views that are getting the airing, their views that are apparently worth much more than those who voted the other way. And so the country of Great Britain, once ruled by a parliamentary system, now finds itself renamed Grief Britain, ruled by the system of emotional spasm and the tyranny of those who shriek the loudest. My goodness, I think you just described one of our political parties.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's been absolutely astonishing here just to see you have on that side, and again, these are generalizations. I don't by no means want to tie everybody to the same brush here, but generally speaking, an awful lot of people who wanted to remain in the EU would tend to be the kind of younger, maybe living in kind of metropolitan sort of areas, and just kind of have bought into the whole globalist idea, and really kind of like pointing the finger at the sort of the older people and who maybe voted leave, and really kind of reacting with a kind of rage which was quite astonishing to behold, really. And I'm guessing you get quite a lot of that there as well. And as I say, we are ruled, and I think this probably applies to the US even more than here, from what I've seen of the election season, shall we say, that you're having over there.
Yes.
Just ruled by kind of emotional spasms and people who are absolutely unable to have civilized kind of discussions and articulate things without sort of resorting to name calling,
right,
and this kind of grief-ridden victimhood mentality and all of that kind of thing, really. So it's awful here, but I think it's probably even worse where
it is. Well, of course, I think there's still some type of homogeneity in your country that doesn't exist in America and hasn't for a long, long time, but they pretend that it does.
Sure.
I knew I'd never have enough time to ask you all the questions. If you can hang on for our next segment, Rob, I'd like to just ask you one little more question about something you intimated in your article about U.S. involvement in all of this stuff. But I do want to bring you back possibly on the show, and we can talk about why people cannot have conversations anymore that actually have some type of stream of consciousness and logic to it, rather than having these emotional spasms, because I really do think that is the order of the day, and that is what's ruining, I think, every country, is just the fact that we no longer subscribe to any type of authority. I'm David Simpson. This is the Veritas Radio Network, radio the way it should be.
Oprah Winfrey has no talk show these days. Harry Caray can't have a talk show anymore. But when David Simpson talks, people listen. And so will you to The True Money Show, exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network channel's Crusade.
Okay, Coconut Man, Moonheads, and Pea. You ready? Seems like everybody's got a price. I wonder how they sleep at night. When the sale comes first and the truth comes second, just stop for a minute and
Simpson had been Jerry Maguire and showed Leon the true money, it would have hit him over the head like the proverbial ton of bricks. Gold bricks, that is. Let David Simpson show you the true money every Wednesday at noon Central, exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.
Lost all my good friends. I get my hands on the dollar again. I'll hang on to it till that old eagle wings. Because nobody loves you when you're down and out.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the True Money Show on the Crusade Channel of the Veritas Radio Network. I want to encourage everyone that if you like what you're hearing and you want the easiest, most convenient way to listen or call in to the Veritas Radio Network, then download our apps in the Windows Phone App Store, the iTunes Store for iPhone, of course, and the Google Play Store for the Android devices. Look, the app is just $1.99, and it gives you fingertip access to the Crusade Channel, the live stream, Crusade Channel host bios, showtimes, Twitter, and Facebook feeds, and all the new Crusade Channel preview feed, allowing you effortless playback of hours of your favorite Crusade content without even leaving the app. So please download today. It's, again, it's $1.99, and please rate it as well because the ratings help us get greater exposure. We don't have a whole lot of time left, but I wanted to get back to my guest very quickly, Rob Slain, who writes at theblogmire.com. You can also find his writings in the newsletter of Samaritan Ministries if you happen to be part of that HealthShare network. And just to really enjoy this conversation, Rob, I'd love to have you back. Are you willing to come back on?
Absolutely, yeah.
I know it's a long drive across the lake that you have to make, but I hope you'll be willing to do it again.
Yeah, right.
So we're talking about Brexit as possibly being part, at least partially, due to this whole economic turmoil that the Eurozone has created and the bailouts have created and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. You think it might have deeper cultural things, and of course I can't disagree with that. You're sitting there, you know. But you also put together one little other idea in your article called, what is this one? I'm sorry. Brexit, be prepared for the mother of all stitch-ups. So I'm going to quote you real quick and ask you to comment on this because, and by the way, you won't offend me. I'm an American. I'm not a United Statesian. I'm actually more a Louisianian than anything else. So you put very little of the discussion so far in the aftermath of the vote, that's the Brexit vote, has mentioned the United States. Yet the stakes are simply too high for the U.S. government. Caught in the grip of an ideological fixation to exert hegemony over the world, to let us leave, that's the British, the Economic Union, the Eurozone, without a concerted attempt to prevent it. And so, right on cue on Monday, Mr. Kerry came to town. Mr. John Kerry, Secretary of State for listen to what Rob calls our country, managing regime change in countries that don't comply with Washington's hegemonic ambitions, that is. What was the top foreign diplomat of a country that doesn't belong to the EU doing in Downing Street? Why, managing regime change, of course, although this time one with a big difference. So you go in to describe something else that I don't want to be too far afield now. Tell me a little bit more about that. So what do you think about our wonderful Secretary of State going over to your country to kind of arm twist a little bit on the opposite side?
Yeah. So he has been to our country twice since Brexit. So he's been one more time after that article was written. I was very struck by his words, which, as it says later down in the article, he was asked if the decision could be walked back, was the phrase that was used, and his response was, I think there are a number of ways. I don't, as Secretary of State, want to throw them out today. I think that would be a mistake, but there are a number of ways. That's a hugely revealing statement, because Mr. Kerry and Mr. Obama and many in the State Department often talk about democracy in various countries and promoting democracy around the world. But here, the Brexit vote was probably just about the purest form of democracy I've ever experienced in my lifetime. You know, we have elections every few years, and we're asked to vote for people who've already been they've already been kind of decided for us. So we don't get that much choice, and in any case, there's no clear distinction between the parties anyway. Here was a clear choice. Do you want to leave the European Union or do you want to stay in the European Union? And although the margin of victory wasn't huge, about 1.3 million, I think, It was what you might call a democratic choice. And then literally 3 days later, Mr. Kerry diverted from, I think he was in Brussels at the time, to come to Downing Street, and there he is in front of the press talking about how the vote can be walked back, which is a staggering thing. So you imagine the situation in a few months' time if, I don't know, if Mr. Trump becomes president. Imagine someone from the UK coming over to Washington and talking about how the vote could be walked back. Well, Americans would be rightly outraged.
Yeah.
by this, infringement of sovereignty, really, and that's really what he was doing there. And I don't necessarily think that they can stop us leaving the EU as such, but I think they're very much trying to work out ways that a kind of halfway house, and certainly not what people actually voted for on the day.
Yeah.
So I think we'll end up with some kind of fudge compromise, if you like, really, which doesn't actually meet the criteria of the question that people were asked on the day.
Rob, I'm going to definitely have you back to talk about this some more. I really enjoyed our conversation. If you'll hang on the phone, I want to say goodbye to you properly as well. But our time here is about up. Rob, I will say this. I will tell you what my father always told me, that if they get a result they don't want, they go against it. And you've got to understand their motivation. The United States has been the biggest exporter of international socialism in any country in the world, and we continue that process, and that's just the reality, guys, that you got to conform your minds to. I'm David Simpson. This is the True Money Show on the Veritas Radio Network, radio the way it should be.
You do it. You play the guitar on MTV. That ain't working. That's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks for free. Now that ain't working. That's the way you do it. Let me tell you. Delivery.